So maybe a first question would be, give us a state of just your tribes. Madison has just been designated in December, Truax Field, as the home of F35A. Doctor, can you start? Give us an overview. The cybersecurity demands on small businesses have never been greater. To talk about this emerging problem and the impact on small businesses, I want to thank four professionals in this business, in this industry, for coming into Wisconsin Eye to talk about the impact of cybersecurity on small businesses. I'm going to ask each of them to introduce themselves. Please.
I'm Matt Frost. I'm with Five Nines. I'm the head of their cybersecurity program.
Thanks, Matt.
Hi. I'm Scott Singer. I'm with PAR Systems. And I'm the head of IT, and I have quality and regulatory.
Thanks.
Good afternoon. Mark Violante with the Wisconsin Procurement Institute. I'm the director of federal market strategies.
Will Cox with the Wisconsin Manufacturing Extension Partnership, and I lead the cybersecurity initiative for small to mid-sized manufacturers here within the state.
Fascinating topic, gentlemen. Bring me up to speed in terms of small businesses generally. Let's talk the 10,000-foot view at first. Cybersecurity and small businesses, something they've been dealing with for a while, but are the demands getting tougher? What about if my business does business with the federal government, specifically the Pentagon? So an overview from any or all of you. Go ahead.
Well, the threat profile has never been greater. Every year it goes up. Depending on which survey you look at now, between 70 to 80% of cyber attacks are now focused on American small businesses. Two-thirds have been attacked or breached in the last year, and that's according to Keeper Security. The numbers keep going up, and unfortunately, the impact keeps going up, too. So,
BNPS, Scott?
Yeah, so first of all, from a compliance perspective, it just doesn't matter whether you're small, medium, or large. You know, we all have to comply with it. We're seeing in my business, often we're not the prime to the government, but more and more I'm having to attest that we're meeting the requirements and basically sign the bottom line saying that we're going to meet, you know, the NIST requirements that have been flowed down to us by the prime contractors. And we also then have to end up flowing those down to the suppliers that we pick. And, you know, and a lot of those could be like one, two mom and pop kind of shops, and it's tough for them.
Mark?
A lot of small businesses receive information which has critical information, and when you aggregate it, that information becomes extremely important and sensitive. Right. And so folks understand, the bad guys understand that someplace in the supply chain may be a easier entry point to access information than going to, you know, a formidable castle, so to speak, that has the resources, the talent, and the folks to put up, you know, to be the gate guardians. So they'll enter or try to enter through the small businesses, and a lot of times the small businesses are focusing on the business, and they're grappling with these new requirements.
And Will?
Yeah, one of the challenges, as Mark says, is that the small businesses, especially the small manufacturers, are where a lot of the work gets done. It provides a good entry point. About 95% of all of manufacturing is done in companies of 200, 100 or less. And they may not have the security that the larger companies have, so they become prime targets. And then they get infiltrated in the bad guys work their way up to the primes and steal bad information is very valuable to the defense industry.
Are there two sets of demands here? One on small businesses that do business that are vendors for the Pentagon and another who doesn't? Are there separate standards? I just know nothing about this subject, so I'm showing my
naivety. There are classifications of information, and the dominant one which is coming out is called controlled unclassified information. And so that could be law enforcement.
Is that a federal standard?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And so the archives, the archivist of the government is the program, the executive agent for this program. And so they lay out the requirements, but it covers, could be law enforcement, it could be healthcare, it could be Department of Energy. There's just a whole swath. It could be somebody that's doing programming for the IRS. So DOD has some very strict standards, but also anybody that's doing business with the government has to be sure that they review their contractor solicitation and make sure that they're adhering to those requirements.
Anybody who does any business that does business with the government, whether you're dealing with DOD, the Pentagon, or any other federal agency.
Well, I would say it's even broader than that.
Please.
Because you also have, you know, HIPAA. Everybody's probably heard of HIPAA. There's personally identifiable information. And so every state has a law that says if that information is breached, if somebody takes a laptop with a bunch of names and phone numbers on it, that's supposed to be reported.
And the regulations are just catching up to kind of where the threats have always been. And in business, what you used to hear is the business of best practice when it came to security. Everyone was doing it by best practice. And it was defined in a bunch of different ways. The regulations are kind of providing some clarity. But for small businesses in particular, I think that best practice has not kept pace with what the current environment looks like and what the current requirements are coming down. So there's, in this moment, this juxtaposition between those two ideas. You know, small businesses used to say, I'm too small, I can't afford it. And unfortunately, the government's now saying you need to find a way.
I'm sorry, Will, you were going to say?
Well, yeah, in one sense, the technology has advanced faster and quicker than our ability to control and protect the information that we share and produce. So every day we connect more things to the internet and haphazardly sometimes forget about how do we control that information so it doesn't get into other people's hands. So that's the exponential increase in information flow is one of the biggest challenges right now.
The bad actors here, foreign or otherwise, what information do they want? Any information? Any way in to your data systems? You were going to say something, Mark.
I was going to agree with Matt. The concept that I'm too small, an article I read a couple of years ago was talking about a small cleaning company, and they were hacked by a competitor cleaning company. And that competitor cleaning company was looking at pricing and customers, and they sat there unbeknownst to the company that had been hacked for 2 years. So in some cases, the bad actor, typically it is going to be a foreign government. Typically it's going to be somebody that's doing things, trying to make money out of it. But it could be, I hate to say it, the person, the company next door that's looking for a competitive advantage.
To your question, the threat out there now has evolved. You know, when we talked about cybersecurity 10 years ago and hacking, everyone imagined the kid listening to punk music in his mom's basement, angry at everyone. And those are probably still out there to some number. We know that they are, but they're much smaller a threat now. You have organized crime with large offices of individuals who are doing this all day, every day. They're trying to gain any piece of information they can, because when you bring small pieces of information together, you can begin to do interesting things. So social engineering is a term we use, where they begin to chip away at details about an individual to begin to steal their identity, whether you get their email address and then you can go on Facebook and grab their name and their date of birth, and then from date of birth you can, in an email, you can possibly authenticate with their cell phone provider and get a cell phone number. And then from their cell phone number, you can then go into their MasterCard and use their date of birth and their dog's name as a security question. People don't realize how much of themselves they've begun to put out there and how intelligent these threats are. And that's not even dealing with the worst threat, which is the nation state, when we're talking about, you know, some of the threats coming out of the Chinese areas and Russia, Iran, North Korea, where these are military-led teams that have a very sophisticated and prolonged attack profile. So the answer to your question, I would say, is anything they can get, because they understand that any small piece of information could suddenly lead to a larger jump.
If I run a small business, I have a lot of different concerns. I have access to capital. I have to identify my niche. I have to worry about employees. I have to stay competitive. Where should cybersecurity rank ahead of all those other factors that allow me to keep the doors open?
Well, So Will and I talk about this a lot. Alliant releases a risk to American businesses. It's a poll, and they rank them. And for the first time ever, cybersecurity was number one.
Number one. And ahead of all these factors that I need to keep my business open. Excuse me.
It is incredible. But, yeah, cybersecurity is up there, not just in the U.S., but all across the world is one of the biggest threats facing organizations. And it can bring down a company very quickly. As Matt said, the bad actors are out there, and they're increasing in number and increasing in sophistication. So it is truly one of the biggest threats we see right now.
Well, but we have so many small businesses with so many different types of businesses. So how is there a unifying message to businesses that can have different products and services? And you mentioned healthcare and tires and manufacturing and all this. Is there a unifying message on cybersecurity that you four gentlemen are trying to get out?
I definitely have one. It's begin to ask yourself the question, what is my cybersecurity policy? Start there. Start just as a business owner or a decision maker in a business. What is our policy? What happens if things go wrong? What is our disaster recovery plan? Have we tested it? Begin to ask these questions, because it's not a matter of if it will happen to you, it's when. You know, you will get hit. We know that the numbers are overwhelming. It's a matter of time. And it is way, way more inexpensive to be proactive and begin to ready yourself for the eventuality where CryptoLocker, which is a piece of malware or of a virus, however you want to phrase that, that essentially locks out your computer with encryption. You know, if that hits your infrastructure, you know, the average downtime is between 8 and 40 hours for a small business where they can't use their machines at all. So you have to be ready for the eventuality, like, okay, this is going to happen to us at some point. How quickly can we get back online, and how cheaply can we do it?
Mark, you want to say something? But
Matt, Will, and I, our programs did some sessions in early December. And to Matt's point, there's a gentleman that raises his hand, had been in a manufacturing business for, was it 8 years?
Yeah.
And they got hit with a piece of malware, ransomware, that locked out their system. And he said, poof, overnight, all of their efforts for that entire period of time were gone. They ultimately were able to recover. But if that recovery, that Hail Mary, hadn't worked, their whole experience for 8 years would have been totally obliterated.
So I might add, from the kind of a company perspective, the small to medium-sized company, is that I had to learn a hard lesson where we were breached, and it was a nation-state attack. And so what I ended up having to learn about, it's not the regulations that I'm worried about. It's protecting the data that's, you know, core to my company. So it's the drawings, it's, you know, the engineering know-how. And so if you're a small company, kind of going back to that theme, you don't have to protect everything, but you need to know what you need to protect to keep the business running.
That's a great phrase. How is a small business person, she or he, need to know what I need to protect?
Well, I would always tell, whenever I speak with small companies, you try to understand that work within your business model, and you know what has been driving your business. You know, a lot of these smaller companies, they've been in business for over a decade, most of them, even the really small shops. And they're very good at what they do, and they know, you know, whether it's engineering drawings or customer lists or, you know, any of those things, they know what they need, and they know what they can't function with. And like I said, I always tell them that the first message I want to get out is just begin to ask these questions. The questions you're asking us are questions that businesses should begin to ask themselves.
And how far along are businesses in asking these questions? Because that's one of the purposes of this program, to get more businesses to think about these questions and how to get some answers. So
I think there's a maturity level there that different businesses are in different places on that maturity curve. As Matt said earlier, I think it's a matter of doing a fairly comprehensive risk assessment of your business.
And can I do that internally, or do I have to hire a consultant?
You could do it internally, but I think getting an outside objective party would be a better way to do it. and look at all the things that could affect your business. It's not just natural disasters anymore, or strikes, or currency fluctuation. It is things like cybersecurity, things that could come out of nowhere to destroy your business. It's like taking all of the money you've made, to Mark's point before, laying it on a table in a public place and walking away and expecting that to be there when you get back. It's not safe environment to be able to run your business without some kind of information security program in place.
So Wisconsin has lost small businesses who have been hacked?
I'm sure that they have.
Mark's story about the business that we encountered in December is not an unusual case. We've seen other companies that have had been breached and have gone out of business.
This is a national security issue, gentlemen?
Yes. Yes.
I'm prior military. I'm Mark's prior military. This is my new mission here. You know, it's one thing as a business owner, as someone in the business community to approach, but when you look at it after serving, you understand that the way we're fighting war now is changing. You know, the enemy isn't just always throwing bullets and bombs at us. They're trying to erode how we do business. They're trying to erode the confidence in our markets. They're trying to destroy that idea of American small town that we all have, where you can go out and start a business. That's what they are attacking, and this is one of the premier ways to begin to do that.
The other piece of that is we're talking intellectual property, and to your point, your earlier point, a lot of companies look at corporate intellectual property, and they have methods and procedures of who can say what to whom and when. You have corporate, where you're a customer intellectual property, and this is national intellectual property. Tying on to what Matt was saying, you know, it's our capabilities on the battlefield. It's our superiority in engineering and science and manufacture that give us the lead, give us the advantage. And then when somebody steals that and they come to parity, it's putting our loved ones at risk to come home. And so really that's, to me, to Matt's statement about the mission, that's what it's all about. That's the recognition that I'm no longer having the upper hand, but somebody else has taken the shortcut. They have all the ideas, all the engineering, all the science that may have taken us billions of dollars, years, labor to do, and all of a sudden they come out with a product, a weapon, a system which is eerily equal even in capability or in the visuals as far as what it can do.
Because it is a national security issue, is there any type of federal or other government aid or grants to help me monitor where I am from a cybersecurity standpoint? And if my internal audit on cybersecurity turns up major flaws, is there any federal help to help me close those doors?
Probably. A starting point would be, first of all, the Manufacturing Extension Partnership that the WMEP is an arm of.
Is there a website?
There's a website. WMEP.org.
Okay.
Has links to a lot of resources that federal government and NIST publishes. So MEP is an affiliate of NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, which creates the guidelines and the requirements for cybersecurity and information security. And many of the things that not only are the regulations published there, but self-assessment booklets, things of that nature to do a first pass and try to gain an understanding of what's out there. But after that, the idea is that you can be overwhelmed very quickly. And that's where the idea is to how do you talk to people or get in touch with somebody who can help you navigate through that. So the MEP network has been charged lately with the Department of Defense as a first line of communication to help point companies in the right direction. What do we need to do first? And then we engage along with the organizations like Mark's. We bring in people like Matt and Five Nines to help remediate that. But the initial thing is to do an assessment. Before you do anything else, try to assess the risk to your organization. And that is usually fairly easy, fairly fast, and you can understand your exposure in the course of a couple of weeks of work.
So your message, Will, is there is help out there. Don't be afraid to reach for it.
There is help, and the idea is to find a path that gets you there quickly and without a lot of expense.
The other door to knock on is the PTAC program, Procurement Technical Assistance Program, and which is part of WPI. WPI is part of that program. That is a DOD-funded program, the program manager's DLA, and we also are funded in part by Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. And so all of our services are free of charge to help companies learn how to do business with the government, but also to learn and understand what are the requirements. And we also do training on a whole variety of topics, including cyber, to help companies understand how to move forward to enter the marketplace and hopefully excel in the marketplace.
Now, you've both mentioned DOD. Is there an estimate out there of how many Wisconsin businesses are vendors for DOD?
Well, we know there's about 7,000 to 8,000 manufacturers here within the state.
Just in Wisconsin.
In the state of Wisconsin.
7,000 to 8,000, excuse me.
And when we did some work with grants a few years back in the defense downturn, we know for one defense contractor particularly, we did work with 100 clients for them. So we suspect about 10% of that 7,000 to 8,000 is solidly within the defense industry.
And those vendors for DOD, they're well aware and already having to comply with these tougher cybersecurity standards, or is that overstated?
They already have to comply.
The
standard went into play December of 2017. Whether or not they're aware of how serious it is part of what Will and I and Mark have been doing a lot of work on, is trying to reach out to them and say, hey, this is real. I mean, this is the word of law now. And one of the things that Five Nines is doing, we sit on the Wisconsin State Planning Work Group for cyber defense. That does a lot of great work for municipalities and government organizations, but it doesn't really reach out to the business community. So we started the Wisconsin Small Business Cybersecurity Initiative. That's WISBCS.org. And
say it again.
SBCS.org. We're taking our partners, Will, WPI, and what we're doing is for free having small businesses come sit with us for sessions and introduce you to some of these resources that are out there and begin to give you talking points into that so that you can begin to approach your business more intelligently when it comes to security. And Will said something interesting that's important. He clarified earlier, not just cybersecurity, but information security. And that is very important because when we look at cybersecurity, everyone's thinking about computers and routers and switches and servers. But the reality is how you protect information, both physically in paper form or how you communicate it to other people over the phone, that's just as important. And it all falls under the same umbrella for the standards as well.
Scott, a follow-up question. As with your company, how much greater a priority are these security and cybersecurity issues in 2019 than, say, 5 years ago?
Well, some of the laws came out in the last couple of years.
Which raised it.
Which obviously raised it. We are seeing, well, if you think about the small business, take one tangent for 1 second to kind of build on that, is that if you're a small business and you know you're working on a government contract, read the PO that you got, okay? Because you're likely going to look at that PO and you're going to see some language on there that's going to drive you to have to meet these requirements, the cybersecurity requirements. So they may not even know, or they may not be reading the POs close enough to know whether they need to be complying.
And if they don't read the POs, how does it come back and bite them in the operations?
That's one of the challenges now, is that by our estimate, and the MEP National Group meets with the Department of Defense fairly regularly, it's estimated that somewhere between only 30 to 40% of the manufacturers that are required to be compliant with the NIST, it's the NIST 800-171 standard, if right. You have control unclassified information doing business in the defense industry. Less than 30 to 40% are compliant at this point in time.
What are the implications if you stay out of compliance?
In theory, they can't. You're not supposed to. You cannot get a contract. So, under the current standard, you have to comply via contract. The challenge is it's kind of like the old telephone game. The prime contractor to the DOD gets a contract from the DOD. That contractor then has to drive compliance to the first-tier supplier. That first-tier supplier has to drive it to the second-tier supplier. So one break in the chain of communication means that third and fourth tiers, which could represent 60 to 80% of the businesses, may not be doing anything right now.
I spoke at the Veteran Chamber of Commerce's business conference yesterday in Milwaukee, and we had two individuals in the crowd who said that they had been denied payment. They were still required to manufacture and ship and produce the components that they had contractually signed for, but they were being denied payment until they came compliant. And then we had one who said that they lost a bid because they could not show or guarantee compliance, even though that they had the better bid. The prime went to someone who could readily sign and was willing to take on the liability of compliance.
They had to make the product, but yes, they weren't going to be compensated, which can threaten the next payroll, correct?
Correct.
Because they had not complied.
Yeah, and this became a hot-button issue. They have since gotten themselves in compliance, but for one quarter, they did not get paid on that contract.
If I'm a small business and this is new to me and I'm beginning to be well aware of it, and I'm in danger of, if I'm told by the DOD you're not in compliance, do I have a process to appeal that decision?
Good. Appeal's an interesting word. What should be happening and what should be happening is a conversation between the prime and the sub or supplier about compliance and where they're going. Ideally, the way the standard's worded, the prime is supposed to push the requirement down, and then the sub is supposed to meet the requirement and with guidance from the prime. We don't always see that happening, and there has been a very long, I mean, the standard went into place for NIST 800-171 in December 2017. There wasn't any real push downhill for it for a while because my understanding is that the government and the DOD understood that this was new and this was going to affect the supply chain and they didn't want it to be stop business. Now we're starting to see the trickle down. It's coming out slowly because they want to give people time before some of these punitive things come in, and they don't want to disrupt. That's my understanding. That's how I'm what I'm seeing. But it's the wave is cresting.
I would add one thing is to kind of build on what you said was that before 2017, some of the primes were requiring you to meet the NIST 853 controls, okay? Mm-hmm. And I actually had to submit a document at one point that talked about how I met all these controls, and there were four that I didn't meet. And so I had to have put a plan in place to show how I was going to meet those four and then get back to the prime. You know, they kept up with me. They, you know, next 6 months, they're, where are you at with this? Are you done yet? But it's, to your point, they don't want to not, you know, the government needs these small companies to build this, you know, components for the Navy or the Army or whatever it is, and so you can't just take them out. You got to get everybody compliant.
I realize that there's every small business is different, but is there a general best practice in terms of should I hire someone on my payroll to keep up with these issues, or should I just periodically check in and hire a consulting firm? Is there any general?
I would say absolutely not. I don't think there's a general one-size-fits-all solution. I would encourage businesses and business owners and decision makers to look at your business model, have a conversation about where you want to be and what you should be doing. And if you don't know those two things, then reach out to some of these, like WMEP, WPI, your primes, reach out to private industry, whatever you have to do. Get an understanding of that, and then build cybersecurity into your business model. Make it a part of your business, not a disruptive part, whether that involves hiring someone or some hybrid of third party and in-house. Whatever solution works best for you, that's what you need to do.
We mentioned earlier, this can be job one for someone now running a small business?
Yeah, job one. So I want to just, you know, from what Matt said and Mark said earlier, it makes sense, first of all, to reach out to WPI and the WMEP simply because we can provide guidance. We're here to do that. We both get state and federal funds to be able to provide that type of guidance at no charge. So we can help with that. You know, I think that's a good first pass to be able to, you know, start down. You know, what should I do? Where should I go? And as Matt said, I don't think there's any prescriptive way that fits every organization. There's no requirement to bring somebody in from the outside, but if you don't have time, it's probably the only way you're going to get it done is to use some degree of third-party assets to make that to get into compliance.
Okay, we're almost out of time, so I've just got two final questions. Number one, we've discussed a bunch of different elements with this issue. Is there anything we haven't touched on that any of you feel is super important? Do you want to either say it over again, or is there any issue that we haven't identified yet that you want to be sure is drawn out? Anything?
I definitely have something. The way small business and medium businesses used to approach security was they were going to get a firewall or a device or some antivirus software. They were going to install it, and they were going to leave it alone. As long as it was updating, everything was fine. And I just really want to drive home the fact that that doesn't work. It doesn't work. And you have to be more comprehensive in your program and your outlook. You have to be ready and willing to accept that it is an eventual happening. It is not an if, it is a when. You will experience outage time or theft of data, and you have to have a plan in place to recover from that, a testable plan, something you know that you can fall back on. So if you're a small business, a lot of my clients are very small. In my conversations with Will and in our presentations, I presented case studies of small businesses that had really scary stuff go on. You know, you have to be willing to accept that it will happen to you. And if you have the right recovery in place and if you've tested that recovery, you're going to be okay. So, and then also use your, I guess I have 10 million, we could talk about it forever, but use your free resources. Reach out to these organizations that are set up to help you, to help guide that conversation. I can't stress it enough.
One of the things I think is important with the MEP network, we vetted a lot of third-party providers like Five Nines to come in and be able to do this work for the client at a very focused and price-conscious way to make that happen. And we've had to vet, I think, pretty much in every state, about 20 providers that can do that before we find a Five Nines. It's amazing when we go into a client find out some of the horror stories of they've tried other subcontractors and the things that have happened. So, rely on Mark and myself to help you connect with the right people.
Okay, one final question for each of you. What's at stake if a small business doesn't get cybersecurity? What's at stake? Will, you want to go first?
Your business, loss of business, okay. without question. The idea is the threat is increasing every day, and without a cybersecurity program in place or information protection program, your whole business could be at risk.
Mark.
It's not only the business, but those members of the supply chain, because once they get to your business, they can move down, they can move up, and ultimately, as you mentioned earlier, national security.
Scott.
Yeah, I guess I would add our economy. Our economy is driven, and this is critical for, you know, keeping the engine moving.
Preach it, Matt. Closing word.
You know, it's the new mission. It's the new mission I have. It's the mission of these gentlemen here, you know, and hundreds, if not thousands, of professionals around the country. We want to protect our way of life, and this is how our way of life right now. I think the premier way it's being damaged is misinformation on social media platforms, you know, attacking business owners, putting small businesses under, which affects American families, American communities. This is where the war is happening. And I really want people to wake up and say, you know, we can protect each other. We can use our partners. We can begin this conversation. You know, for the Wisconsin Small Business Cybersecurity Initiative, I invite other vendors, competitors of mine, come and talk to these people. You might be a better fit than our company. We might be a better fit than you, but let's begin to grow this, because this is where the war is happening now.
I want to thank Matt and Scott and Mark and Will for a discussion of a very important issue. Gentlemen, thanks so much for helping Wisconsin and I begin to get into this, as I said, super important issue. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.